Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 68 of Season 10 of Movie on Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back once again, Heather.
I am excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, you and I are excited. I don't think Bud's not feeling anything anymore, and we're actually gonna get reactions of numerous characters to find out what they think about everything that just happened yesterday. So
yes, because it completely changes just like 2 days ago. This completely changes the dynamics of everything that happens from here on out.
Completely. So minute 68 begins with the hostages continuing to wail and cry, and ends with the passengers still crying.
Fair.
Yeah, this particular minute gets bookended by a lot of crying, for better or for worse.
Indeed. And Mr. Gray chewing his bloody gum.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. So first we get the hostages and we see that they are clearly all scared. And then after that, we get a shot of Blue, who looks on at everybody, in a stern fashion, trying to get them to maybe shut up, or he doesn't really care. And then we see the look on the face of Gray. Now, Gray, how would you interpret what Gray thinks of what's going on here? I think on the one hand, he's like shocked that Blue actually did it.
Yeah,
but
I think
he's pleasantly shocked. Like he doesn't smile. He's just chewing his gum.
I think he's just reevaluating it. I think he understands that he misjudged Blue, but I agree with you that it's in a good way because he's like, he's more like me now, because they haven't been, I wouldn't say at odds, but they've definitely been bristling against each other up to this point. So I think now he's like, he's a son of a bitch. So am I. Yeah. There's a likeness that's been acknowledged there.
Right. But then I love Blue's facial expression to Gray right after that. Because when I look at it, I see in his eyes that he's basically saying, I told you so.
Yeah. But I also think that there's kind of like there's that, but also like, I didn't need to say it to prove it. Like there's a little, I feel like there's almost a little posturing there. Like, what now? A little bit of that. Just a little bit. And then it's because he doesn't really react. But like you said, in his eyes, he's like, kind of told ya.
That's right.
But I think he's expecting less pushback from him now.
Yes. Yeah. Because again, Blue has followed through with his threat.
Yes, and he's just not overt with the bragging on the I need to do the violence, where Gray's more like pro, I'm gonna start shooting. I'm gonna start blasting some Danny DeVito there. Yeah. They will both do what is necessary, but Blue is more contained. Gray is more unhinged. That's all.
I think Blue is also looking at him saying, look, I'm a man of my word.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll follow through. I don't have a problem doing it.
This is what I was going to say I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it.
Yep. He shot a dude in his back. Completely innocent guy. Just shot him in his back.
Completely.
So if we had any questions about him not being like a totally as bad as the rest of them, that's gone now.
That's right. Completely gone. All right. So I'm going to ask you a question that I've asked just about every one of my guests so far. And, you know, the fact that yesterday you and I threw out the idea of Reservoir Dogs, it might have been in the green room. I don't remember if it was in the green room or during the show. But so my question is, do you think that this is a heist that Mr. Blue put together all himself? Or do you think that there's someone like Joe from Reservoir Dogs who put together everything, has given each of the men, you know, their job in this particular heist, and that's why they all have the same color names that you would get in Reservoir Dogs. Again, there's no right or wrong answer to this, because we will never know. what really happened
Yeah,
here.
there's nothing to indicate that there is, but also it is very well put together. It's been planned out meticulously, clearly. And they all have the names. There's four guys. There's four guys. It's not like there's seven or eight either. It does feel like Blue is inherently the leader, but I don't necessarily feel like it was his plan. So I would, if I had to pick one or the other, I would say that there might have been someone behind it that planned the whole thing and
Right.
got these guys together because they don't know each other. This,
Exactly.
the
That's
fact that
that to
the
me is
fact,
what tips things off. The fact that
yeah.
how would any of them know each other? That type of thing. Like we get the impression that Blue might be aware of who Brown is.
Yes. That's it, though.
But that's it.
That's
We
it. Clearly, Gray and Blue do not know each other.
Right. We know the fact
Now,
that they say that, the rumor is that Gray was kicked out of the mob. That was it, but yeah, it's a rumor, and it's like it's not as if this is a guy we know, and this is and then my biggest question is how did they find Green? How would Blue, if this was Blue's plan, how would he have found Green? Just happen to
yeah.
find the right guy who's able to find a way around the dead man switch, which we'll find out over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, well, unless and those two did have a rapport, but they also didn't act like they knew each other. Yeah, if none of them knew each other, or even two of them knew each other out of the four of them, it still feels like somebody else put it together.
I mean, again,
If it
going back to the Reservoir Dogs analogy, these guys didn't necessarily the guys in Reservoir Dogs don't know each other from beforehand, but they're doing a lot of the pre-planning together. So, during the course of the pre-planning, it's very possible that these four guys, then got to know a little bit about each other, a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, which is why they might have a couple of them might have a rapport and they might have certain preconceived notions about each other, but they clearly don't actually know each other.
Right.
At least that seems pretty clear to me. So
Right. I mean, one of my
that's
guests,
why I'm leaning into it.
right. One of my guests seems to think that because they split the money up four ways, that means that there's only four of them. But I don't necessarily agree with that because, in order to carry the money, they need to split it up four ways.
Yep, and it's not like they had bags or backpacks or like anything like that. They were literally putting it in slots in their jackets and their shirts.
That's right. That's right.
So, yeah, I
Okay,
don't think.
again,
I mean,
this is
it's
something that we'll
interesting to
never know.
speculate, but yeah, I think that there was somebody who was heading the plan.
Yeah, okay, I would lean towards that also. But again, it could also just be that we're projecting that information onto it because we're aware of this movie's connection to Reservoir Dogs, and that's what
Yeah.
happened to Reservoir Dogs. It could be either way.
It could. It
But
absolutely
again,
could.
I
But I
like the
think we're
speculative
right.
on it. Well, of
Yeah,
course,
I think we're right, though.
aren't we always?
Yeah.
Heather, anyone could just go back and listen to any of the episodes that you and I have done. We're always right. There's no question
Exactly. There's your answers. Rob and I know everything.
about
That's what they'll change the names of all these episodes. Rob and Heather know everything. Tune in
Maybe.
if you want
Maybe. Okay. So let's continue along here. So
learn. Sorry, I
then
was riding the knowledge train.
it's okay. Not a problem at all. No need to apologize there. Still hear the people screaming out. And then we're back in the command center, and Frank, who's looks like he's typing something up on some sort of I don't even know what it is.
Switchboard
No, he's not
news
even on a
ish.
switchboard. It looks like an early version of a fax machine or something like that. It's got like
Oh, you're
this
right. You're
yellow
right. I'm watching
paper
him
and
now.
stuff like that. It's just very weird. Not really sure what it is.
I do like all the command center stuff, though. It's really cool watching them all, especially because now it's all like really, really old tech to
That's right.
watch how it works. I think it's cool. I love all of these sequences. They're fun for me.
Yes. And so Frank, we hear Frank go, "What?" And then he walks over towards where Garber is, And you know the camera pans to Garber, and Garber now he's taking off his jacket. He's you know his tie is unraveled a little bit. You know we see he's a little ragged here, and he goes, "What the hell are you talking about, Rico? Why would they shoot a hostage? We're still under the deadline." So this goes back to what we were talking about the other day, how they left out on purpose, thankfully, that Patrolman James has passed this information on to Rico, and Rico has now passed that information on to Garber, you know, that they just shot a hostage. And then we hear Rico say, "I told you, somebody just threw a shot at them." He goes, "Who the hell was it?" He goes, "Nobody knows." He goes, "My bet is we never will," which is a great line because
It
it's
is.
the idea that nobody is ever gonna pun intended cop to it that they're the one who took the shot. You know, the only way that they can theoretically do it is if they go and confiscate everyone's guns and check to see who's missing a bullet. You know, that's the only way that they could do that. But my
Which, and
assumption
it's,
is that they're not going to do that.
no, because if anything, this is going to be messy as far as PR cleanup, and they aren't going to want to do that. They can reform the way this entire situation went down if they want to. They can sculpt it many ways because there's not enough people there to actually corroborate one way or another, other than our patrolman, who will likely go along with what they tell him to go along with.
That's
So
what Patrolman
that
James did.
flies.
Yeah. And then Rico continues and says, "Z, when are we going to hear from that cop who's on board?" And I really like this little conversation between the two of them, because then Garber says, "What do you want, Rico? A suicide? There's a bunch of heavily armed men down there. What chance has one lousy cop got?" And then he throws in the line, "Especially if it's a dame." Now, obviously, this is something that only could be said in a movie in the 1970s. Nowadays, everyone would go completely nuts with a line like that. But coming from Walter Matthau, it doesn't sound as bad as it probably is, because at the time, for better for worse, that's the way these type of people, carry. People like Garber, that's how they acted during that time. So it's an interesting reflection on 50 years ago, but obviously times have changed, and you know that's not a line that you would say now.
No, and I think it's good to point it out and acknowledge it. The fact that we're like, oh, that's dated. That's okay. We don't have to sit here and, go, they're all bad people for doing that. But also up to that point too, I did notice they mentioned it a few times earlier on. Like, we don't know who this cop is. And they did mention that it could be a woman. And at one point Garber did say, does it actually matter? He brought that up too. So it's a line that we didn't need the dame line here. But we know that now. At the time, like you said, this is definitely of its time.
Well, come on,
And no, that would
we
not.
heard Kaz Dalowitz saying that all the way at the beginning. How the hell can you run a goddamn a subway, with oh no, how can you? What did he say? How can you run a goddamn railroad with a woman working here? You know, things like that, because he was talking about swearing. You know, but from that perspective, he wasn't disparaging women with that comment. He was basically saying, "I want to be able to talk however I want to talk, and if there are women around, I'm not going to be able to talk the way that I want to talk."
Because at that time, you wouldn't curse a gentleman, supposedly wouldn't
That's
curse
right.
around a woman
Exactly.
throughout that.
So again,
It's just understanding the context, and it is really understanding the culture of the time too. But I don't, I like Garber a lot, and most of what he says, he's pretty calm, he's thoughtful about, and he doesn't put anything out there without it having some purpose or intent. He thinks about what he's saying. So yeah, it's not like I went all of a sudden either went. I did cringe, but that's because I should cringe. But also we can move on and we can let it go, which I think is something that we also need to acknowledge when we're watching older films and ingesting art from the past is yes, these things are going to exist. Do we have to condemn them because of it? No. Some maybe, but for the most part, these are just products of their time. It's good to acknowledge that that is not how we do things anymore and we can move on.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, what's funny about this whole thing is that later on, I'm sure you noticed. You probably noticed this line also. After the cop is on the ground, and Garber goes over to him, and he goes, "The ambulance is on its way, ma'am."
Yeah.
Because he thinks that the hippie is a woman. So I
Yep, because
think that's funny.
he has long hair and he has like the whole thing over him. Yep.
That's funny. So again, it's a nice callback to this line, because maybe in that moment he's saying to himself, "Wow, I've been thinking the whole time that a woman couldn't do this job, but hey, this is a woman. She's actually taking care of things." So maybe in some ways that's Garber's way to redemption from that phrase. Even though he's wrong, it is a man, but that's
Yeah.
not the point. But in his mind, he's consoling a woman who's been shot, who has, spoiler alert, who's just killed Mr. Brown, and forced basically Mr. Blue to commit suicide. So.
Yeah, but I think he treated the officer the same way he would have treated an officer had he thought he was a man. And that is the import. And I think that's where any kind of redemption comes in, is
Correct.
being treated the same.
Yes.
So that's why I appreciate it. He wasn't doing the extra doting because he thought he was a woman or anything like that either. Yeah.
I completely agree with that. And then Garber turns around and walks over to the station behind him. And so I couldn't tell exactly what he says here because I saw two different things, that either he says, "Boy, what a mess," or he says, "Oi, what a mess."
Yeah.
Which
'Cause
is
he's
very
mumbling a
different.
little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
But Walter Matthau does mumble. He's a grumbler and a mumbler.
that he does. And then he walks over to the other station, and he goes, "Pelham 123, come in. This is Garber." And we see that Blue has come back to the entrance of the cab, and he like forcefully takes the mic, and in some ways makes it feel as if Blue has finally reached the end of his rope from this particular, that he's not happy with what he had to do right now. He wanted this to be as clean
No.
as possible.
Yeah, it, to him he's just being pragmatic. This is what was necessary. This is what he had to do. And like you said, he's a man of his word. He'll do what he says if he has to do it. But he would prefer not to if he didn't have to. He'd like to keep it as clean as possible. Also, the more dead bodies they have, the more heat that they're going to have on them.
That's right. And the more difficult it'll be for them to get away, even though nobody knows what their plan is.
That is my favorite thing about hijack movies, heist movies and stuff though. It's I love watching them go in and do whatever they do, but it is the how are you going to get out? How are you going to get out? So once they're there, that's what's so exciting for me is trying to figure out how they're planning their escape because that's where they all get caught
You're gonna have
most of the
every
time.
man, woman, and child in New York close their eyes and count to 10.
I know, because it'll work. And that's one of the things I really do like about this movie too, is they address it regularly.
Yes. How are they gonna get out of here? I don't know. Beats out of me.
Yeah, don't worry. They call Blue out on it all the time. Like, yeah, you're not gonna make it out of here. I think Rico actually says it to him at one point. Yeah, you'll be locked up later or something at some
No, he
point. But
says, I'll see you at your arraignment.
there you go. Thank you. Yes,
Yes.
that. Yeah. I'm like, ha ha. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of great lines in this movie. That's one of the things I love about this movie is that it takes itself very seriously through most of it, but every so often you have characters just throw in one-liners that just lower the flame a little bit.
Yep.
And so at this point, Blue responds and goes, "This is Palm 123. Come in, Garber." And then Garber goes, "For Christ's sakes, fella, did you have to do it?" And again, it's great how Blue knows exactly what he's talking about. And he goes, "One of my men was fired at. I warned you what the penalty would be." He goes, "Yeah,
Yeah.
you warned me." So he realizes he's got nothing to respond to when he says that type of thing. And
No, and I kind of appreciate that too. He's not like going to talk down to him. He's not trying to schmooze him in any way. They're both just kind of like, You got a job to do, I got a job to do. It's like an actual, well, this is what you have to do, and this is what you have to do. And they both have taken each other. I feel like there's a certain amount of respect for each other in what they're doing. They both understand that they're going to take advantage of whatever they need to when they need to.
Right. That's true. And then there's a certain point where when Garber is talking, that he looks over and we see Frank, you know, still at the typewriter thing, whatever we were talking about it. And you can see the clock above Frank. And once again, they got the continuity so perfect in this that it says it's 3:23. Like, we know exactly what time it is. And you know, someone spent a hell of a time making sure that they get the clock right throughout this
It's
entire movie, and
crazy
it's great.
difficult to get continuity like that correct in movies. I'm like you, though, when I see it and I see that they're intentionally doing it, then I start looking for it. So, like, I think in Aliens, maybe even in Speed, like anytime they mention there's a countdown or time and it feels like it's going to be close, I'm counting down or I'm going to pay attention to the clock and see if it's going to follow it. It doesn't always follow exactly, but it's you some when they bring it out, it's usually pretty close. But it's got to be difficult to do, so I appreciate it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I give so much credit to whoever the script supervisor was in this movie for being able to really make sure that everything is done properly here. It's just unbelievable because, again, I've been following this now for 68 minutes. The fact that they have gotten the clock right so many times. All right, the script and continuity person in this movie is named Nancy Hopton. So you see, I'm now going to give a shout out to Nancy Hopton, wherever you may be.
Well done, Nancy. Well done.
Seriously, she did a great job. She was in charge of script and continuity on 40 different movies, all the way up until 2020.
Wow.
Meaning she might still be around. I don't know. But she did the Client, Hot Shots Part Two, Falling Down, Honeymoon
Ooh,
in
Falling
Vegas,
Down.
The Naked Gun 2½, The Smell of Fear, Bonfire of the Vanities, Joe versus the Volcano, the first Naked Gun movie, Big Business, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. All right,
Well,
there you go.
yeah.
Got to give her credit for that one. One of the Apocalypse
Holy.
Now, Hair. What else? This movie, The
Oh,
Conversation,
wow. That's Francis Ford Coppola, isn't it? Yeah.
The Godfather.
Wow. Wow. She's got the big guns, man.
Yeah, she
Well, that
definitely does.
explains why it's so great. Impressive. Most
But
impressive.
she in this movie, she's just done an amazing job of it. So gotta give her a lot of credit for it. Nancy, if you're out there listening, we appreciate the fact that you didn't avoid having clocks
Yeah.
in this movie and made sure that it was the right time all the time.
Bravo.
That's all I can say from that perspective, seriously. Nicely done there. And at this point, we get another shot of the Mr. Blue, who looks at his watch.
Right after we've had a clock in
And
front of us.
then he goes,
Perfect.
that's right. And then he goes, where's the money? And then he pauses for a second and he goes, I'm going to give you 30 seconds more. And then he hangs it up. And you know, we get a shot of the passengers. They give us like a little panning shot of the passengers, and we hear them continuing to cry. And but they're all back seated in their seats, which is a good thing, instead of being on the floor. But yeah, these hostages are very concerned
Yeah.
at this point about what's
Yeah.
happening. And that's all I have to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted
Nope,
to
I
add?
think we covered it. It was a good minute. They're all good minutes, but that was a good one.
All right. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Hijack Hump Day, where my guest will give their Top five movies featuring hijacks.
This was difficult.
So,
Just
once again, why don't you just give us your top five? Start with your number five and
All
work your way
right.
up.
I did have a hard time with this. Most of them were planes when I really started like looking into it. This was one that I had to. I was like, everything is on a plane. It makes sense. Planes are easier, but I expected more trains and I expected more subway action. So my list begins with number five, Con Air. I love that movie. It's so much fun. It's a ridiculous amount of fun.
I think Jay's gonna be upset
It's not lower.
that
I
it's
know.
so low.
I know. Sorry, Jay, but I mean, I have other good ones too. Number four is Passenger 57. Wesley Snipes. Number three is Pelham. Number two is Speed. Speed, speed, speed. I love that movie so much. And I don't think it's a particularly smart movie, but oh my gosh, is it so much fun. I think I probably, the year it came out, I watched it so much. I can't believe we didn't destroy the VHS tape, honestly. My mom loved Keanu Reeves too, so. And my number one is Get Off My Plane, Air Force One, which I'm sure is probably on a lot of people's top five. But yeah, that one was hard. That one was pretty tough for me to narrow down. There were some cool ones out there too. And it made me, re I remember Executive Decision. I haven't watched that in forever.
I actually rewatched that not long ago because of the season. You know, it's been mentioned a few times, so I said, hey, might as well take a look and see what it is
Is it
again.
still fun? I remember liking it.
It's fun. Again, it's not perfect. The thing I always say that I love about that movie so much is the fact that
Steven
they kill
Seagal.
off Steven Seagal like halfway
I
through the
know.
movie. So, you know,
I
that worked.
know. I know. I think that's why my mom liked it. My dad loved Steven Seagal, so like Under Siege was one of my options too. It's my favorite Seagal movie. But my mom couldn't stand him. So that was a movie we went and all saw as a family. And I remember her being very, very happy about his death also.
All right, makes sense. Definitely makes sense. Yeah, I like how they do
Yeah,
that.
it was also surprising. It was definitely surprising. You don't expect him to go out that quickly, but it wasn't his movie.
No, it was not. And that's why he didn't
Oh
make it
gosh, I have to
in.
watch though. I have to watch Exit Wounds so often because my husband loves that movie. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. It's fun. It's fine.
I gotta tell you that I don't even know what that is. What is
It's
Exit
with
Wounds?
DMX. It's I think the late 90s, early 2000s it probably came out. Steven
Who's
Seagal and DMX.
DMX?
Rapper. He's dead now. Yeah,
Oh, okay.
rapper. It's there's some
Not
other there's some there's
familiar with
some
him.
other some other well-known actors in there too. But it's one of those movies he has on all the time, and if he sees it on TV, he's gonna stop and watch it. And I'm like, we could pass it. We all have our guilty pleasures, and they're perfectly fine.
And you know, you gotta have give and take in a marriage every so often. You gotta watch things that you don't necessarily want to
I don't
watch.
mind watching it. I just don't want to watch it all the time. But I can read a book
Okay. You can read a book
while
while
he's
you're
watching
watching it.
it. That's
No, you meaning sitting there reading a book while
yep.
he's doing it?
If he's watching something I don't want to watch,
He's
I
not gonna
just
do it.
grab my book and I start reading. It's perfect. And then I sort of watch
And
anyway.
as long as he doesn't get upset at that, then
Yeah,
that's fine.
we're in the same room doing different things. He has to get the outburst for my
Okay.
books.
Got it.
It's fun.
Okay.
It's fun.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. So we once again have the daily game of Name That Remake. So we're going to spin the wheel and see what movie Heather's going to have to try and guess. What it
Oh boy.
is. Round and round and round it goes. Okay. The original movie came out in 1960 and the remake in 2001.
Okay.
Okay. Any guesses
No,
yet?
no.
Okay. A group of former army buddies band together and try to pull off a master heist.
2001. 2001 heist movie. I should know this.
You
Inside Men?
definitely know it.
No, no, no,
No,
no,
he
no,
said
no, no. That's
no.
wrong. That's wrong. That's just the first one that came to mind. Former army guys. Oh my gosh.
I know
I
you've
know
seen the
I have
remake.
too.
I can't guarantee that you've seen. I can't guarantee that you've seen the original. In the remake, they're not army buddies.
Okay.
So just think of a 2001
That's what
heist
I'm
movie.
trying to do right now.
Okay, I'm going to give you a hint for the 1960 version. Features numerous members of the Rat Pack.
Oh, Ocean's 11. Damn
Yes,
it.
very good.
Damn it. Yes. Perfect. Okay. Gosh, that's like the biggest heist movie in that timeline too, by leaps and bounds. Those movies are so much
Yes.
fun. They're so much fun.
Yes, I agree. All right. So, Heather, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
You can find me at heatherbaxendale.com. You can find my books on there. They are fantasy adventure, lots of fun. Both my podcasts are on there, Word of Hellmouth, Buffy Rewatch Show. We are in season four of Buffy and season one of Angel right now. You can find my other podcast, A Pod of Wings and Filth, on there, where my friend Morgan and I talk about fantasy books twice a month. And you can find all my social media on there as well.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, achoo!
Zoom, hey.